Hello and welcome to Untouched, the podcast from the Centre for Visual Cultures at Royal Holloway, University of London. In this podcast series, we will be delving into the themes of touch, tangibility and intangibility in engagements with art on an everyday basis, on trips to galleries, in curatorial practice, in artistic creation and in academic research. We will be asking what it means to physically interact with visual culture, what we can get from non-visual engagements with art, how the pandemic has changed our approach to artistic interplay, and what happens when we encounter the intangible and the unknown.
My name is Anissa Talaid-Moodley, and I will be hosting today's episode of the Royal Holloway Centre for Visual Cultures podcast. I'm an assistant professor at the University of Toronto and also an honorary research associate at Royal Holloway and a member of the CBC. Today, I will be talking to Dr. Vasuki Shanmuganathan, an artist, researcher, and educator living and working in Toronto. So hello, Vasuki. Welcome. And thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the CBC podcast.
Hi, Anissa. Thank you so much for having me.
So I would like to start by asking you to tell us a little bit about yourself and your work.
Yeah, so I was trained in gender, cultural, and critical race studies in the UK and in Canada. And my way to where I am today hasn't been a straight one, as I often engage with different fields such as health and ethics. But I believe we are all drawn to similar concerns, even if we're in different disciplines. I would say my overarching interests have remained with the impact of colonialism and race and how we perceive and care in the world today. What I have sought to do in my work was to challenge how I think through concepts such as care. And it's perhaps a term that's used by many disciplines, but difficult to explain where it starts and when it ends. And I was really excited when you mentioned this podcast, which is looking at the intangible, the tangible and touch, because my questions align very much with these areas. I'm also an artist, and as such have tried to look for ways to answer some of the scholarly questions that I have, looking at digital art, augmented reality, and conceptual art, especially looking at ways in which I would, I use the term communal care, and looking at the sorts of reciprocities that happen in and around us, locally and globally. I'm also the founder of Tamil Archive Project, which is a 25-person collective of creatives that are deeply engaged with art, community activations, knowledge sharing, and archiving.
Okay, well, thank you so much. And I mean, talking about the questions of tangibility and intangibility, which this podcast is interested in, and the role of technology, digital technologies. And one of the questions that is central is how this can enhance people's experience of art and widen people's access to art. So could you tell us a little bit about your own experience of using digital technologies as an artist and a curator and in terms of engaging artists and audiences with art?
That's a great question and a very big question. So I'm going to preface it with something. Digital technology has been part of the art experience, but there's also skepticism that has been voiced, which we very much need to take into account. It's very hard to realize what the impact of technology is on us because so much is suddenly everywhere. And we're developing technology at such a fast rate. And so I welcome the hesitations along with the excitement in using digital technology to engage audiences. One of the biggest shifts I've noticed through digital technology has been going from local to global. then also engaging different types of audiences that otherwise would not have come into the spaces that we previously had.
So could you tell us a little bit about what do we lose with the intangible, with digital technologies, and what do we gain?
Yeah, that's a great question too. I would say what we lose with the intangible is presence that we have through touch, presence that we have through the warmth of another person being in the space with us, which was the experience before the pandemic. So a lot of times when we had events or art exhibits, or even artist talks, we would show up to spaces, we would share in the experience together. And so sometimes the intangible doesn't necessarily allow for the materiality of objects or sculptures, but also the reality of being in spaces with other people. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in terms of your own work, I mean, of course, the pandemic is a key factor in terms of having changed our relationship to art and to reality as a whole. So what was the impact of the pandemic on your practice?
Yeah, so I'm going to draw a picture. Perhaps this is easier. Before the pandemic, the events that I would attend or hold had very little technology. It was all about centering the people in the room. Mm-hmm. Or if it was an art event, you would have the art either on the wall or in the exhibition space, and it would be people talking to each other. So very little technology was used in the space. Perhaps you had your cell phone with you to take pictures. Mm-hmm. But in terms of engagement, it was person to person. And then when the pandemic came, instead of organically onboarding technology, we were suddenly forced to use technology and rely on technology. And so it shifted that relationship to one of dependency. Mm-hmm. If I want to speak to another person, I have to use technology. And with this, it actually brought new possibilities of engagement that we did not think about. We also, with the use of digital technology, learned and unlearned a lot mm-hmm. of lessons that we would not have simply mm-hmm. before the pandemic. So mm-hmm. after the onset of the pandemic, we learned that we could engage audiences that otherwise don't have the programming that we provide, for instance, in their respective countries. We learned through the pandemic that the limitations, the laws that exist in other countries that prohibit certain identities to exist, the digital space through which we engaged allowed people to connect to those identities and participate. So that's one concrete example that I have of how digital technology can actually change experiences globally and locally.
Do you have any example of that? Of specifically, I'm thinking about the work that you did, you know, after the onset of the pandemic. Any particular example of how this happened? And I know you did a project called For All I Care, and which brings that question of care that you mentioned earlier into the picture. And so I wonder whether you could tell us a little bit about this aspect of your work. How have digital methods been helpful in facilitating care, for example, in your work?
Yeah, so For All I Care was a group exhibit, and it was examining how existing systems harm or help or exploit or nurture us depending on our social location. Mm-hmm. And it was a local project that was developed in response with conversations we had with people and so this project took place in Toronto, and Toronto has a lake. And we were by the lake, and we asked people about their feelings and experiences of caring for themselves as well as caring for others. And so the project itself was pulling the affective under closer examination. Mm-hmm. What was exciting about that project was we very much questioned what was tangible and what was intangible and what was lost if you couldn't touch anyone. Because there were restrictions in place and the exhibits needed to take that into consideration. Mm-hmm. But we also thought about questions of accessibility based on social location. And so taking our questions and speaking to people who are living in the area mm-hmm. was one way which we went outside of the exhibition space mm-hmm. and engaged with audiences. And we also created two types of engagements. One was very much a conceptual art in the space itself. Then there was also sound art. Mm-hmm. So if people couldn't touch anything, they could listen mm-hmm. to art pieces. Mm-hmm. And the other piece was digital engagement. And we wanted to make it playful because so much of what we have been going through had been quite serious. And one project that we did was we asked people to submit their GIFs, so GIF, mm-hmm. and we played on this acronym by calling it Gestures and Feeling. Mm-hmm. And we asked people all over the world to submit how they greet each other, what kinds of gestures they do with their hands, what kinds of gestures they see as care. So one example was someone caressing a flower, or a mother was braiding the hair of their child. Mm-hmm. And so these were great examples of how the digital can facilitate connection, even mm-hmm. at times when we can't do it.
That's wonderful. Yeah, very interesting. And I mean, you also, I believe, did another fascinating project called Grounding Caresses, which is very close to what you described about gestures. And I understand that it also used digital technology. And so it also brings together the local and the global. So could you tell us about it?
Yeah, thank you for asking me about that one. Grounding Caresses took place during a really challenging time. We were in lockdown. You could be outside with other people, but you had to keep 6 feet distance between each other. And so when Grounding Caresses was exhibited, it was displayed in a shop window type setup, which made it an ideal for people to view something from the outside. So it didn't have any of the restrictions that concerns that other galleries may have had. And it was part of a larger exhibit with three other projects. Grounding Caresses was a collaboration with Ardi, Ria, Alex, Laxvana, Vinuda. And so these are the other members who were part of the other artists who were part of it. Columns are these intricate patterns that are drawn by women at the front entrances of their homes, of Tamil homes often, but it also is cross-cultural. And it's a way to mark important occasions, but it's also a history that's infused into these columns. And so if you've seen one, it's an art form that requires advanced drawing skills as well as mathematical skills. And it's passed down in many ways through kinesthetic memory. So you learn by doing, and you have maybe notebooks that are passed down from grandmothers to mothers to daughters to granddaughters. And that lineage is a very long one.
Okay, so this practice of columns drawing is practiced in South Asia and was carried forward in diaspora?
Yeah.
Okay,
so what happened was in the diaspora, a lot of these practices were disrupted just by migration and loss of knowledge. And so as a group, we came together to kind of think through ways of how do we revive something like this, mm-hmm. Which is supposed to be passed down had we stayed. Mm-hmm. And so this the coming together of this was really fascinating. So it was the height of the pandemic with all the restrictions in place. And one artist who is in Texas calls her grandmother, who is in India, mm-hmm. In Tamil Nadu, and says, can you teach me how you draw columns? Because my mom has forgotten the practice too through migration. And sure enough, she's on the phone with her grandmother showing her on FaceTime how to draw columns on the ground. Mm-hmm. Because you're very much caressing the earth mm-hmm. through the pattern drawing. And then she interpreted this as the artist using photography and light. So she played with light and photography and recreated these patterns. Mm-hmm. And what I really loved about, so Vinitha recreated these patterns quite imperfectly. And I think that in itself was supposed to be a commentary, so you can try, mm-hmm. but without this repetition and without this care for repetition, mm-hmm. It's quite difficult. And then that pattern was sent to New York, California, and Toronto. Mm-hmm. And so artists from these three different areas then reinterpreted this. So one person, Arati, used their birth dates of family members to create their column digitally, and so it was a computer that generated this column. Ria used computer generation as well mm-hmm. to create a pattern, and Ria is someone who is trained in computer science, and so for her it was a combination of something that was from the ancient world versus something that was very much surrounding her present world. For Alex, it was also a combination of both, looking at different patterns and putting them together. So it's a reconstructed column. And for Lakshmana, she did a deconstructed column. Mm-hmm. So what happens when a computer decides to deconstruct it and make it sense to the computer rather than to the human? What happened was the columns that were digitally made were printed out onto canvas, large canvas, and they were hung. And we wanted to be mindful of the height at which they were hung in this window space so that people who had walkers or wheelchairs or they wished to be seated, they could sit at a safe distance and look at the work for a longer period of time. Also at a height that children could access. So that was one of the ways in which we worked with the physicality of the space, but thinking about the audience, mm-hmm. Because we wanted as many of the audience members to have a chance to look at the exhibit. Another way in which we thought about accessibility was also to have a barcode, a scan code as they call it, on the window so that someone would say the sentences. You could also read the exhibit description in both languages, so English and Tamil. And we had someone on site who could also assist. So if people were having issues, that person was able to translate, or they could also speak to the audience members that were at the exhibit. And so this was at the height of lockdown. And so it brought about new challenges, but it also, in those challenges, we learned what accessibility means to different communities. And the community that this gallery was located in has a highly diverse neighborhood, and multiple languages are spoken at any time on the street. What was so fascinating is the columns drew not only people from the Tamil community, but other communities as well. The Tibetan community, who also has patterns that are drawn, and so they felt they could have a conversation at this exhibit as well. It was a time-consuming project, but it was a great example of learning how the digital can also engage an art practice that has been from the ancient world. And put it into the present world with all the shortcomings that living in the diasporas have.
That's fascinating. So all this work is about learning and also practicing art and creating art at a local and global level. and involving human and artificial intelligence, I believe, as well as computerized technologies and digital technologies. So I believe you're also involved in research. So what is the role of community in your research and your research directions, so especially with technologies?
Yeah, so when we start thinking about how, when I started thinking about how communal care manifests itself in the different communities, what I found quite fascinating is my focus is on looking at racialized communities who have been displaced, marginalized, and also come from histories of traumatization, whether it be colonialism, war, or other forms of displacement. And what ended up happening was the Canadian Research Institute for the Advancement of Women, which is a national organization, gave me a grant to actually look at the restorative practices that are already in operation. And one of the ways in which I could sort of get at an answer, at one possible answer, was utilizing digital technology. And the way in which we engage in forms of care using digital technology, and as well as looking at ways in which we seek to be outside of digital technology to engage in care, and mm-hmm. what happens then when it's not captured in research. And so it's a big complex question that requires maybe multiple modes of exploration. Mm-hmm. And so for me, the research component of my art practice is equally important, because research in many ways is also a mode of archiving mm-hmm. that which has happened.
Yes.
And acknowledging that this was in the space. And we often perhaps think of research as something that is meant for the scholarly community. But I think in this case, it was also something that was quite useful for the community at large in acknowledging that this all-encompassing form of care does exist, and here are some of the ways.
Mm-hmm. So I know this is another aspect of your work, it's the archive. I know you've been doing work on the Tamil archive in Toronto, and I mean, could you tell us a little, maybe something briefly, because I know it's a whole area of your work, and how it relates to art in a way, you know, in terms of the relationship between art and the archive, and the role of technology in bringing the two together.
I believe the UN has this concept of intangible heritage.
Okay.
And it's the acknowledgement that there are certain things that a culture has that are very much heritage, but they're intangible. Mm-hmm. And I was drawn to this idea because it gets away from thinking about artifacts, it gets away from thinking about materiality towards what does it feel like to capture movement, mm-hmm. What does it feel like to capture touch, or the things that are quite intangible but can be felt. Mm-hmm. And so with the archive, we wanted to make it a living archive, meaning that we very much believe that people carry each other's histories, and we're responsible for each other's histories. Mm-hmm. And so Tamil Archive Project is perhaps unusual in that we have members from all racialized communities mm-hmm. in our collective, and we feel it's important to carry each other's histories and be responsible for each other's histories. Mm-hmm. And so the living archive is also one of, you carry the story of your friend mm-hmm. and your friend carries the story of you. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the community activations that we did before the pandemic and during the pandemic were all about centering that over and over and over again, because there is very much a lack of space mm-hmm. to think about these thoughts, mm-hmm. about how we exist in this world and who cares for us.
Mm-hmm. So that's so in a way, this effort to bring together the local, the global, and communities is tied in within the digital project of breaking down the boundaries of the between the tangible and the intangible. and to break down also the physical and social boundaries. And in that respect, yeah, I think it'd be interesting if you could tell us a little bit about the this participatory idea, which I find very interesting, how you see people not just as consumers of art or producing art, but all of this together, and trying to deconstruct these kind of hierarchical ways in which art has been understood, I guess, within the Western tradition as well, in a kind of solitary idea of the artist, for example, and how this participatory process is facilitated through technology, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a great question. I believe that for this project, but also many other projects, the participatory part is important to us because it constitutes what agency means. So for us, and also just the lack of experience, the majority of members of Tamil Archive Project are youth. And so we're all very much in the same room going, do we know what we're doing? Or should we try out different things? Mm-hmm. And so it, on one part, it was organically arising as something that we very much wanted, the participatory element, because we're a group of creatives who work in collaboration. So that's one area. And then the audience, we always invite them to be part or participate in the art projects because we very much see art as a means of communicating with each other. Mm-hmm. But also it's an invitation to a conversation. And so someone, I believe it was one of the exhibits we had, it was on, it was through a shop window. And we had different members come through, and it was maybe the grandmother, the daughter, and the granddaughter mm-hmm. come to the same exhibit. And we made sure to have the descriptions in English and in Tamil. And we noticed that people would then finally communicate because the grandmother, who unfortunately didn't read enough English, couldn't understand it, but she understood the Tamil component. And so we noticed they were having conversations with each other about whether they liked the exhibit or not, whether they enjoyed it. And it was really fun to watch that you could have cross-generational and intergenerational engagement and conversations with people mm-hmm. that otherwise would not have felt welcomed in the space. It also taught us new things about accessibility, perhaps not new things for the rest of the community, but these were new for us. Mm-hmm. And so some of the things we had to unlearn is our hesitation with technology it was at that time very much centered in able-bodiedness. Mm-hmm. And we did not think much about how technology can actually help invite more people into the space. Mm-hmm. And so we shifted our understanding of technology as something that was taking away things mm-hmm. and moving us towards the intangible, towards one of who is it actually inviting into the space that wasn't invited before or that didn't feel invited before. Mm-hmm. And so there, I think, is where research and art can intersect. Mm-hmm. So one of the big learnings we had was not just people from other parts of the world joining our programs online, but also people who had accessibility issues were able to join because they now had internet connections. Now they could join through things like Zoom and participate in the programming. Otherwise, they would not have been able to come out. Toronto is enormous. And if you have programming in one end, and you have to take the bus or public transport to the other end, it could take hours. And so you do lose out on audience members who would very much like to participate, but were not able to. We also had more participation from people who may have had young children and may not have been able to travel as far. And so that was a new experience for us in terms of learning who feels more welcomed into the space mm-hmm. as a result of digital technology.
Thank you. And so all this learning, you know, after this learning and these developments, I mean, after the onset of the pandemic, we don't want to say post-pandemic because we don't know yet, but what is the future? What does the future look like in terms of your future projects? Or, you know, is there anything you would like our listeners to be aware of, or anything, you know, that that you are planning, maybe?
Yeah, one of the future directions that have become important to us, just by the composition of the collective itself, we're all members from racialized communities. And during the pandemic, but even before this, we challenged the idea of accessibility. So accessibility often goes from the concept of let's make sure everybody can physically access the space, or we offer different forms of access. And we wanted to add, what does it mean for also racialized communities to feel welcomed into the space? And so one example I gave previously was about these language translations. Second example was also reimagining the space and what a welcoming space looks like for different communities. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a very challenging, but also really potentially fruitful direction in which all spaces could go. So rethinking, how do we welcome everybody to our homes, mm-hmm. or to museums, or even outdoor spaces? What makes people feel welcomed? And I think that's where the excitement, mm-hmm. A little bit of risk-taking, and mm-hmm. A lot of fun lies, mm-hmm. Both in research and also in my artistic practice. Mm-hmm.
So. Okay, well, thank you. So, yeah, as I said, is there anything you would like to make our listeners aware of in terms of, you know, the thing that we discussed so far? Is that something you would like to add?
Yeah, so here's the UK connection. When you asked me to speak on this podcast, what I forgot to mention, and I'm very happy to mention, is during the pandemic, when Tamil Archive Project was very much trying to help out the local community, someone reached out to us from London, and they started a sibling organization called Inclusive Tamil Arts. Mm-hmm. And so we're quite happy that our idea of providing communal care has also found roots in London. And it's exciting when other people also want to share in the fun.
Okay, well, thank you. So all the best of luck in your future project, and thank you so much for doing this podcast today. So thank you Vasuki.
Thank you, Anissa, for your thoughtful questions.
Thank you.
So much for listening to this episode of Untouched. All the information you need to find out more about us, the Centre for Visual Cultures, is linked in the episode notes. If you have any thoughts or questions on what we've discussed today, email us at centreforvisualcultures@rhul.ac.uk or tweet us at @rhul_CVC. This podcast is produced by the Royal Holloway Centre for Visual Cultures, located in the Languages, Literatures and Cultures Department at Royal Holloway. Edited by myself, Anna, with music by Gaspar Senna. See you next time.